Welcome to the NAPA Podcast, a pilot series of 8 podcasts focusing on practitioner careers brought to you by the National Association for the Practice of Anthropology. For more information, please visit our website at practicinganthropology.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Welcome to the NAPA Podcast. This is Terry Redding. Today is January 8th. Today we're talking with Adam Koons. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you.
And can you tell us, just first off, your title and your company, who you work for?
Yeah, my title, I work for an international humanitarian and development organization called Relief International.
Yeah.
My title is Senior Vice President for Program Management, which means that I am in charge of all field operations, which includes, at the moment, 29 country programs.
Wow.
We have about 48 and 55 projects right now. I think it might actually be closer to 60 projects. Projects come and go on a monthly basis.
And these are global. I mean, you're going Asia, Africa, other places?
Well, we work in 3 regions. We work throughout Africa. We work in East and West Africa and a number of countries. We work throughout the Middle East and then through the entire range of Asia. So Central Asia all the way over to East Asia and Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And we do not do anything in Eastern Europe, and we have no programs currently in Central or South America.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about, you gave us your title, a little bit about what that entails, but what do you do? You and I were talking earlier that very soon you're going to be traveling. I know that you're constantly jetting around the world. It sounds all very glamorous, but I know it's probably not. So can you tell us a little bit about what it is that you do when you're traveling and when you're back in the home office here in Washington?
All right. What we do, we have a range of programs, everything from humanitarian response in crisis. For instance, we're working with the Syrian crisis in 5 countries, in all of the countries surrounding Syria and in Syria, as well as natural disaster response. So I just got back recently from the typhoon-hit areas in the Philippines. And then we do a range of long-term recovery and humanitarian programs. For instance, we have large-scale programs in Somalia and in South Sudan and in Darfur. And we also do more classic, if you will, development and growth programs. We have large girl-child education programs in Somalia. We have agriculture programs in Pakistan. We have environmental and ecological livelihood programs in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole range. And then in terms of my own role, each country program has a country director who is in charge of all of the projects through project managers. The country directors report to regional directors, and they report to me. So we get money from a variety of sources, from the U.S. government, from other governments, for instance, the British government, the European Union, and a variety of United Nations agencies.
Right.
So my job is to make sure that there are no problems with host governments, with our budgets and vis-a-vis our donors, with, to keep the projects on track in terms of, we promise a certain number of, I hate to get into jargon, but a certain number of deliverables.
Right.
For instance, we will educate 55,000 girls.
Mm-hmm.
Or we will install 100 new water pumps or 500 latrines, and then we have to make sure that we do that. And number of cases, things will be very difficult, both because of the difficulty in the country, because of changes in staffing, because of government regulations. There's a limitless list of challenges. And my job is to provide technical support, management support, and very often moral support to the program staff and intervene when things become too stressful or too difficult. For instance, when a government decides that they no longer want us in their country.
It sounds all quite complex. So what kind of, maybe a two-part question, do you think anthropologists are kind of naturally skilled at these management-type roles, and what background knowledge, information, tools from anthropology do you find that you use frequently?
Well, I had anticipated that question, and I did not get to this position, you know, in a very short amount of time, and I'm proud to say that I spent over 20 years living overseas in a variety of countries, everywhere from Haiti to Sudan to Cameroon to Kenya, in a variety of roles, all the way from project manager to food security officer up through, you know, a regional manager. And so the anthropological skills are present all the time. To me, the easiest answer is whenever we do an emergency response, or whenever we are working on humanitarian issues, or whenever we do a economic development program, we are basically messing around with people's socioeconomic and cultural way of behavior. We are changing the way that they normally do things, and we are trying to change them for the better, but we are changing how they work. We're changing the resources they have. We're changing the knowledge base that they have. And that can have hopefully positive, but actually very negative consequences as well. The anthropology part, and I'm proud to say that, you know, in my role now in a fairly elevated level, you know, I have the authority to influence program design, policy, procedures, and, you know, I use that anthropological ability to look forward and to predict and anticipate consequences and implications of our programs. And, you know, I can give you an example if you want. I don't want to keep going
No, this is all very interesting information, so sure, an example would be wonderful.
Okay. So, you know, for instance, in, let's say, a non-emergency setting, emergencies are a whole other category, but suppose we are doing an agricultural development project, and the idea of the project is to grow more food and produce more income from the food that is grown and sold. So that all sounds great, and one would automatically think that that's all a great idea. But given the culture, you know, it could be in Cameroon, or it could be in Haiti, or it could be in the Philippines. So then what I would do, and what I would ask my staff to do and to think through very carefully, is what consequences could something that sounds good have? For example, if people are then earning more money from their agriculture, who is spending that money in the household? How is the money being spent? Is the money being spent on frivolous technology, or on educating girls, or on beer? For instance, if you have a more efficient farm because of the project, are you using less labor? well, what happens to the laborers that you used to hire?
Right.
Do they then become the most vulnerable and poorest people?
Mm-hmm.
If you expand your ability to utilize land because you're a better farmer, you might need more land.
Right.
That then might implicate land tenure and legal issues with the government. So all of these issues can come out of a simple agricultural development project, which at face value seems like a great idea.
Right, right.
And so that's where the anthropological skills come in. And so as I have risen up in my career to various levels of seniority and management, I've been able to influence those kinds of design and those kinds of policy decisions at higher and higher levels.
It's probably something that in many quarters there's probably, and maybe you have experienced this, probably some areas of controversy in terms of people disagreeing on kind of what we before were sort of alluding to unintended consequences, you know, because you're going about, I think, with some of your projects, and one could say that you're affecting culture change in some way because you're getting people to do something in a different way. Would you agree with that, or would you not, that there are those that could say what you're doing is controversial because there's unintended consequences, you're doing something that's changing the way people have always behaved, or do you think that is no longer really an issue?
Well, I don't know whether it is really an issue in anthropology or applied anthropology, but in my world, in the development world, and there are a handful of anthropologists that do this kind of work, but generally they're not anthropologists. So in my world, this is completely uncontroversial, because, you know, what we're doing is we're taking people that are vulnerable, that are poor, that are hungry, that are malnourished, that are sick too often, and helping them.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, classic anthropology, and I don't want to step on any toes here, but classic anthropology was to examine, observe, analyze, conclude, theorize. And, you know, the younger breed of anthropologists, and I was young once, younger breed of anthropologists said, well, if we're going to observe all of this poverty and suffering and learn about how people work and behave and how they learn and how they can progress, we can't ethically stand by and just observe and take notes. We have to use that knowledge to help people improve their lives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So in my world, it's not controversial at all.
Right.
Controversy comes in is in that debate about unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for instance, if you are party to a dam project, and ultimately the dam is going to create water resources and hydroelectric power, but you have to resettle communities, you know, what is the moral or ethical high ground or not? In a case like that, or let me bring it closer to home. In terms of personal experience in Darfur or in Libya or in Syria, when humanitarian workers have to be neutral, it is required that we be neutral. But that doesn't work in the real world,
right?
Because if you are completely neutral, then both sides of a conflict won't let you operate because you're not siding with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so if you have a choice to not operate at all or to help one side or the other, do you take the moral high ground and not help anybody, or do you pick a side?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Or do you secretly work with both sides? So this is... but. These are the kinds of issues that we struggle with, but as an anthropologist, I also have looked at these kind of issues. And, you know, I'm not sure what the greater, let's say, applied anthropological community thinks about these issues.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my personal approach to this is you help as many people as you possibly can, and so you pick the side with whom you can help the most amount of people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting. So it sounds like there are often very hard decisions to make, and having that anthropological background helps mitigate potential harm in those decisions. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't want to claim any exaggerated brilliance or genius of anthropology.
Okay.
But at the same time, I think that as anthropologists doing this kind of work, we look far more carefully at, you know, we take the emic view, is if I were a villager in this community, how would I perceive this project? If I were a village leader in this community, how would I perceive this project damaging my or interfering with my local authority?
Mm-hmm.
If I were a peasant in this community, and how would I perceive this project when I know that the village leaders might be angry with me?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to go back to, you know, your question, I think that at every step of what I do, there is anthropological examination and analysis, and my role in senior management has been, you know, the normal day-to-day administrative, supervisory, management stuff that any manager does.
Right.
But invested throughout that is my ability to continue to question my colleagues and my staff about, well, you know, what will the women of this community think?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are there racial or ethnic biases? Are there tribal influences that could affect this project? How would the government perceive us helping one ethnicity versus another? I mean, that's happening right now in South Sudan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, it all comes back around to being a normal manager, but yet seeing it through, and I hate to use the cliche, but seeing it through the lens of socioeconomic influence.
Mm-hmm. So do you find yourself asking questions that someone who would be in your position but not an anthropologist might not necessarily ask in some of those situations?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that experienced, smart, insightful, development and humanitarian professionals should ask these questions, and some of them do,
mm-hmm,
but many of them don't.
Right, right, right. So how did you, can you talk a little bit about your career trajectory? You know, how you got to where you're at? Did you always know this is where you wanted to be? Were there any serendipitous moments? Were there any surprises? Those sorts of things.
I actually knew at the end of high school. I entered college my first semester, knowing I wanted to be an anthropologist.
Wow.
Which I found later was very unusual.
That's my experience.
Was at the time.
Right.
It's because just late in my high school life, I got to spend time on the Navajo and the Hopi reservations.
Wow, okay.
You know, I actually learned for the first time that there were people that knew a lot about Indians.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
If they weren't Indians, then they were anthropologists.
Okay.
And I just thought that was really fascinating and intriguing. So I entered all of this just as, you know, as an anthropologist. But then as I learned more about anthropology and merged that with my upbringing and my very acute awareness about poverty in the world, and suffering, and I come from poor Russian heritage.
Okay.
And so I started to look at, well, we learn, anthropologists learn all about culture and society and socioeconomics. How can we help people?
Mm-hmm.
So it was the combination of wanting to help people and wanting to observe and learn about people. But that then progressed through graduate school, where I got an opportunity to work on Capitol Hill for President Carter's Commission on World Hunger.
Great.
And that kind of launched me into this, the whole idea of hunger, famine, food insecurity, malnutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So it really went in the direction of helping people who are really suffering and who are really, really the most vulnerable. It just went from there. I did my doctoral research in West Africa among women farmers. And that's where I got this this real clear idea that, for instance, the example I used earlier about agriculture, I was working on a big United Nations agriculture program for men and women, and I saw how the difference between men and women, the difference in the way they reacted to agricultural improvement, that was actually became the topic of my dissertation.
Hmm, interesting.
And that then sent me further and further into jobs where, as I said, I worked my way up from a number of different international organizations up to where I am now, but from a field officer to a project manager, and at each step I was learning more about what works and what doesn't work, and looking at that from the point of view of, well, I could use ethnographic and anthropological analysis methods, but at the end of the day, I couldn't do an ethnography. I had to deliver latrines or water pumps or,
right.
A number of acres of new coffee trees.
Right.
But then it was actually several assignments that I had, for instance, in Haiti and in Sudan, where just like the worst of humanitarian issues surfaced, that kind of pushed me more towards emergency and crisis related activities.
Okay.
Because when people are struggling in their normal lives to make ends meet and to support their families, and then they're hit by a war or an earthquake or a typhoon or a hurricane, it throws everything completely off. And so there's a whole other level of assistance you have to give to people just so they can survive.
Mm-hmm.
Get back to even a very low level of status quo. And that was fascinating to me. And admittedly, it's a tremendous adrenaline issue. There's tremendous amount of, I suppose, type A personality instant gratification when you're watching crops grow like coffee trees. It takes a long, long time.
Right.
But when you are providing food, water, shelter to people that have been victimized by war or a hurricane, and you're actually saving lives, it's pretty instant and pretty clear and observable.
Right. Wow. So it sounds like you've been on a pretty much an international development track your whole life, your whole career, and maybe have gone off on different branches of that tree. Are there any other studies or educational things that you found useful in your career outside of anthropology?
Yes. And what I've had to do is learn, kind of be self-taught in both management and certain technologies. For instance, you can't get a job in this kind of work being an anthropologist. There are no vacancies. announcements for anthropologists.
Exactly, right.
So I had to teach myself to a large degree, for instance, agricultural program design and water technology. And I can speak the jargon, and this is something that anthropologists could be good at, because we anthropologists are pretty good at learning jargon, sociolinguistics. Well, you can learn the jargon of water and sanitation, and you can learn the jargon of food and nutrition. And in order to be effective, you have to speak that language.
Right.
In order to get ahead, you have to speak that language more and more fluently. And so I don't have a degree in agronomics, and I don't have a degree in water science, but I can speak those languages, and I know enough so that I'm not pretending. The other very important thing is, I am a manager, and, people get MBAs, and people get all kinds of degrees in management science and management strategy and management approach, and what I do day to day in the middle of everything else I've just described is I do management. I hire people. I take care of personnel issues. I take care of budgets and budget analysis. I balance issues between different departments. So, one of the things that I found very helpful that I would have liked to have done more of is actually study management. And some people do come to this this arena with, let's say, a degree in anthropology and an MBA, or a degree in economics and an MBA. But management science is very, very important, and learning it on the go like I did is probably less effective than learning it a little bit more deliberately.
Right, right. And how did you go about doing that? Were you just going to the library and picking up journal articles or books? I mean, what is the mechanism for teaching yourself?
It was more, and again, this goes back to classic anthropology, it was more apprenticeship.
Okay.
It was more, just observing very carefully and very analytically managers that I respected and that I found were effective. And also observing and examining very carefully and noting managers that I thought were very ineffective. Basically, I had this apprenticeship or informal ethnography of what to do and not to do as a manager.
Right, right. Now, you had mentioned earlier about no one will pick up a newspaper and find a job posting for anthropologists. So what do you think students, those who are still in school, what's the most important thing they need to be thinking about planning for to make that transition out into the workplace?
Well, they need to have skills or be able to demonstrate skills in some of the topical areas that this kind of career hires for. So, one good thing is to look at some of the journals and websites that recruit for non-governmental organizations in the UN and look at who they're recruiting. And, for instance, very often what's becoming more and more important to this whole domain is monitoring and evaluation and assessment. The people giving the money, the donors, are becoming more and more interested in demonstrating that the money was spent properly and demonstrating that there were no negative effects of their work. So monitoring and evaluation, which basically is, in anthropological terms, it's surveys, focus groups, data analysis, good observation. So one of the easiest, there's nothing easy, but one of the most direct routes into this kind of work, I think, is marketing yourself as not as an ethnographer, but as somebody with the ethnographic and anthropological skills that would make them a very good monitoring and evaluation and assessment officer.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is for instance, I always have a preference for hiring, when we're hiring very young staff,
yeah.
Hiring people that have had Peace Corps experience or have had internships where they have been doing something like agriculture or water or nutrition. So to the extent that somebody can study applied anthropology and then do a thesis or a dissertation that focuses on one of those sectoral technical skills. For instance, my doctoral dissertation focused on a massive agricultural program. And even though I was studying anthropology and getting a degree in anthropology, I actually learned how to design and implement and assess a major of agricultural program.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So to the extent that you can piggyback or multitask technical skills with those anthropological skills, that's kind of the ticket.
Great. Adam, you really dovetailed nicely into my final question. And in fact, I'm pretty sure you answered it, which was going to be, what sort of advice and recommendations would you give to those who are interested in international development? And I think you answered that by the monitoring and evaluation focus, the focus on technical skills. Is there anything else, any other advice you would give to anyone interested in going into your line of work?
I think that one of the things that I've seen on both sides is people coming in at a junior level and being willing to really work your way up, even if you come in with a master's degree and you're an intern, you're going to be making the photocopies and taking minutes at meetings and, making plane reservations.
Yeah,
I think that sometimes we tend to get an exaggerated view of our education and how that applies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that education you need to be willing to be in the trenches and do the dirty work and work your way up. Basically take anything that's available. And I've had people come in for potential internships and refuse an internship because they decided that it was below them, the kind of work that we were proposing to give them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I've had other interns that have done really well and done the low-level work and wound up being program managers in a really nice country because they stuck with it and they proved themselves and they proved themselves to be versatile and durable and flexible, and they were there at the right time at the right place.
Right, right, right. Great. Well, Adam, it's been really great information and a really good conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. I think it's going to be really helpful for a lot of folks who are interested in this kind of work. So good luck to you, and thanks again for talking to us.
It was my pleasure. If I can help help young professionals into this kind of work, I think we need more anthropologists doing this kind of work. So, to the extent I can help that happen, I'm very happy.
Great, great. Well, thanks again. All right.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening, and be sure to check out the other podcasts in our pilot series. For more information, please visit the NAPA website at practicinganthropology.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.